All right, everybody, my name is Dan Francis, and I'm the executive director of a company called Ghost Town Restaurants. I get this privilege every once in a while to tell people a little bit about what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I tell you what, today my life is really, really fantastic. It's better than I would have wished for. It's better than I would have wanted for. It's better than I would have ever believed anybody would tell me. It's just in a really great place. And I'm not saying everything's perfect. I'm just saying that day in and day out, I'm amazed at the quantity of opportunities, the quality of the people that are around me, and the sense of well-being that I have inside me. And it was not always that way. You know, I was born and raised in between Chicago, Illinois, Atlanta, Georgia, and Bramford, Connecticut. And I'm really grateful for all those different places and times, and I was always a very troubled person. Maybe not on the outside, but on the inside. I, like so many people in recovery, I never felt a part of anything, and just kind of seemed like the odd man out. I did a lot of weird stuff. I tried to burn down the forest when I was a kid, and just, you know, I'd like to steal stuff for the thrill. I really had good parents. I had a stable household. I had everything I needed, and everything I needed was not enough. Was raised in a church, played all kinds of sports, managed to get kicked out of 3 high schools in about 2 weeks of time. Things were changing for me quick in my life. There were some disasters along the way, like a lot of us have, and there were some triumphs along the way. I still never felt complete or whole or satisfied. I was what we like to say, restless, irritable, and discontented at a very young age. Somewhere along the way, at about 13 years old, I discovered alcohol. And at about 14 years old, I discovered marijuana. And between the two of them, I discovered peace and a sense of belonging and like a culture and a group of people that I thought I could be a part of and that I thought were a part of me. Wasn't very good for doing well in school. Managed to quit the football team in high school and all that kind of stuff, sort of driven on my own mission. All the while trying to be cool, trying to be the life of the party, trying to be, you know, something I wasn't. I really lived a double life. I told people what they wanted to hear. I felt the way I felt, and they were kind of two different things. I'd gotten a lot of trouble at school. I can remember shooting rubber band off my finger one day, right? Bobby French sat right in front of me, and it went right over his head in slow motion and hit a 74-year-old English teacher named Mrs. Castor right in the eye, because she went like that, lifted up her glasses, and that's one of the memorable moments where I didn't mean for it to happen, but that's what happened. And that's the same thing that sort of chased me throughout life. Got a job as an EMT later on, just, you know, very young in my life. I went and did that for a while, and that filled my head with a lot of fantastic experiences and a lot of opportunities to do good. It also filled my mind with some things that maybe I don't want to remember. And I just carried those things with me for the longest period of time. As I got older, I got married, I had kids, and I just wasn't an attentive husband. I wasn't an attentive dad initially. I really didn't know what to do. Again, I'm trying to find something outside of me to help me feel better. Smoking weed and drinking a lot, and I never quite found it. As time would go by, I would start businesses and do different things, to some degree success. You know, I made a living, I got by, and met a ton of interesting people, found myself in really amazing places. However, that feeling was still inside me. The only thing that would get rid of it was getting high and getting drunk. My wife and my children's mom divorces me along the way here, and I would have too, I don't blame her. I'd have left me too, thinking back on it. And we remained friends, and I still remained in my children's life. She was beautiful in allowing me to do that. I meet another woman, and we would have a great relationship. She's my wife now, and I still couldn't feel fulfilled. I just couldn't get it. By now I'm drinking heavy and often. And I chain smoked marijuana. My wife liked to say it took 27 bong tokes just to get to the grocery store. And I was hungry when I got there. I tell you what, I'd buy some groceries. And things just weren't good in my life. I wasn't paying my bills, you know, I always had a crappy car. Even though there's plenty of money to do those things, I'd spend it on other stuff. Had to move a couple times because I didn't pay the rent. I finally ended up with a really crazy job, and that was a job representing illegal drugs as legal drugs. And I would be using those illegal drugs because I was addicted to them. And I would use them and use them and use them. And the alcohol slowly stopped working. And I went from drinking 80 proof liquor to 101 proof liquor. That'd be wild turkey for all you people that drink beer. And then, you know, using chemicals inside of grain alcohol just to try to get high. My body started falling apart. And I became very sick, very, very sick. My wife of that time would leave me eventually. And I found myself all alone. I didn't have anything. I managed to alienate myself through lies and stealing and deceit and bad behavior in general. I got arrested a whole bunch of times for DUI and drug possession. I just basically wrecked my own life. And all that was left was me sitting there, pancreatitis, early stage kidney disease and kidney failure, liver failure, and I was all alone. Something changed though. A buddy of mine came by. His name's Fred, a very dear friend of mine. And he wanted to get in a fist fight with me to make me do something, so I kicked him out of the house. He came back later, and he had a meeting schedule, and he just begged me to go one time. And I said, I'm not going to any of them stupid cult meetings, bunch of God freaks, kind of weird stuff's going on in that place, you know? I've been there earlier in my life. I had a stint in rehab as a teenager. So I was familiar with them, but I didn't want to go. I was familiar enough to know what I wasn't going to do, you know? And I got down there and grabbed a couple of pamphlets that I was gonna just take back to show him and say, hey, I went. And they read this funny thing in that fellowship called The Promises. And for whatever reason in that moment, for some reason, and I don't know why today, but I think we all know why when I say it, is I wasn't tuned into anything. I was sitting there thinking about, how am I gonna get home? Do I pick up liquor on my way? He probably threw my couple handles of turkey out while I wasn't there. That's what was on my mind. I was bitter, cussing at my wife. I wasn't thinking about anything like spiritual at all. But something about those promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, it's how it starts. And right there, I tuned in like I knew every single word of it. It was so incredibly clear. It's this strange moment. Movies would have done it like, you know, you're hyper-focused. And all of a sudden, I heard every word of it. I have no idea how that happened or why that happened. But in that moment, I knew this was done. I could hear that still small voice in my head saying, it's dead, or right now, you stop. I knew it. I knew it, like every cell in my body knew it. And I immediately started to cry and sob, and I couldn't get it together. Through a week of DTs and bad things, I brought home my pamphlets, don't worry, I wanted to make sure everybody knew I quit, you know? I wanted all that kind of credit. But I hadn't heard nothing, but you know, 25 years of debauchery should be eliminated if you have a white chip and a pamphlet. I mean, after all, you have done something, right? So, I went through DTs, the whole thing, and they were really nasty. But over time, maybe about day 30, my head started to clear just enough. I got a sponsor, and he was walking me through the steps. I think he was pretty frustrated because I couldn't really, I don't know if I just didn't understand him, if my brain was just messed up. But over time, I began to garner an intellectual knowledge of the steps. And at 9 months, knowing the steps, having reconnected to my wife who came home in the midst of this, having found church very, very reluctantly, mind you, and the answer to if somebody wants you to go to church with them, not only go, but go and enjoy it and get involved. And it's not because you've got to believe anything or anything like that. It's to do something for somebody else. And that's why I ended up in church, because my sponsor baited me into that statement right there. It's not about me and what I want to do. It's not about me and what I want to believe. It's about someone else asking to do something with them that they think is nice and that they would enjoy to have me do with them. That's it. So I got back involved with all that, and on my way down to a bar to play a music show, I was listening to spiritual music, but I'd let the meetings slip. And I'd stopped calling my sponsor. At 9 months, I saw a handle of Maple Crown Royal, and instead of thinking, man, I don't drink anymore, which I thought all the way up to that moment, it just went away in my mind. And I thought, man, I've never had Maple Crown Royal before. And I sat down and poured myself a 20-ounce glass of that and just drank it on back like it was sweet tea. About halfway through the second 20-ounce glass, it occurred to me that I don't drink anymore. But you know, that natural inclination, heck, I've already done this, we'll quit again tomorrow. Well, tomorrow came, I was drunk, had to call my wife, and that was full of trouble. But I came to a spiritual realization of my addictive nature that night, and I'm grateful for it. And what I mean by that is, I learned the program and the 12 steps and those things from the standpoint of intellect up until that point in time. And I understood them, and I could tell you things in the book and where they were, and I had an idea of what they meant anyway, because I could spout off what other people said anyway. I sounded good. It's kind of like 6 months, Chip, you know? You know enough about the big book if you're trying to sound really good, but you really have no idea what the hell it means. But it's the nature of it. Don't worry. I'm not insulting you if you have 6 months, but you maybe reconsider how good you think you're doing. And I came to this new understanding, and I say it's like this. When people ask me about it, I say it's like this. There's a day I know my parents will die. I know that. I know that from an early age. I know that. That knowledge is right there, and I see people go through it, and friends of mine have it happen. It's a whole lot different than the day that your parents die. And that's the difference between intellect and spirit. One of them is from your heart and every emotion you have, and the other one is just your brain working. It's just undisciplined mental play. And it's good. It's good to understand it both ways. From that day forward, I dove into the steps, and I worked really hard to do exactly what those steps say. And I dove into scripture as well. And I looked through that scripture to find out how it correlated with the steps. In this time, I'd come to the ninth step. And the ninth step, there's a place in one of these books where it says, even if it means going to jail. And because of my activities, I was being investigated by a whole bunch of different law enforcement agencies, and I had been indicted on a lot of federal criminal charges, and I was coming to terms with that ninth step amend right there. Do I plead guilty to the things I have done? And when I talked to my sponsor about that, he said, well, what's it say in the book? And what the book said was, you may have to do jail time to get through that step. It'd be 5 days later that I called my attorney and I pled guilty. And my first experience of the power of the grace of God started to happen. As my lawyer encouraged me to be honest, as the program encouraged me to use rigorous honesty, as I started to use prayer and meditation as a way to maintain all these really heightened emotional states, as I used the different program elements of accountability to move myself away from trying to dodge these issues, my responsibility to my wife and my kids and all that, I was able to work my way through this and navigate my way through this, go to prison for a couple of years, come back out, and you would swear that I'd gone on some special mission somewhere and been highly successful, because the people of the program were thrilled when I got back out of prison. And people from my church gathered around and took care of my wife. And those men of my men's group basically acted as a husband for her while I was gone. That's incredible. You'd think I did something right, and I didn't. I'm just holding the zero mark, you know, baseline. And people came through. Since then, I got out of prison and I do all the things the steps say. I work them every single day. Not in the sense that I think step one or step two, but in the idea of practicing those principles, the idea that other people come first in almost everything I do. And I only say almost because obviously I'm just like you and you're just like me, you know? Ain't one of us perfect at it, but it's something to keep on our mind all the time. My moniker is, the more important I make other people to me, the more important I'll become to other people. That sense of significance that I wanted out of life that I couldn't find, that sense of purpose and that sense of peace, I discovered something. And you guys may have already discovered this too, and that is, it comes from serving other people. It comes from putting others first. And for me, that's the 12th step of recovery. Today, that served really well. I own a business that's successful, and I use these principles to operate it. I use those traditions to govern it. I'm surrounded by people in recovery and opportunities to tell you guys, you're worth it. It's not possible. If you're alive, you're not too low. And that you're worth it. In the course of time in recovery, a lot of people have died, and I don't want that to be you. So my sister died of an overdose. You probably know someone or many people that have died of an overdose. Just think about this for a second. If we don't have each other, we can't be successful. So I just want to be one of millions of people worldwide that invite you to stick with the program of recovery and to stick with the things that make your life good. And I'm really grateful that you're in the program of recovery, because no matter where you are on planet Earth, you're contributing to my sobriety. And as they say on page 164 of that one book, I hope to meet you one day as we trudge the road of happy destiny. Thanks for listening.